The Women of Ill Repute, with your hosts, Wendy Mesley and Maureen Holloway.
Wendy, today is a good day to discuss the F word.
Uh-oh. The F word? Which F word?
Well, it could be the F bomb, which we do drop from time to time on the podcast, but I'm talking about an F word that is far more contentious and misunderstood.
Yeah, I know. It's got to be friendship, right?
No. No.
Fingering?
Is that how was your second choice? You went straight from friendship to fingering. All right. No, it's not.
I got a good one now. It's feminism, right? It's feminism, yes.
Yes, it's feminism. It is so divisive. And yet, who would not say that they believe in equal rights? Is there anybody in the modern world, the enlightened world, who would not support human choice and sexual freedom? Who would not want to end gender stratification and violence?
Well, I mean, that's all sounding very enlightened. And I agree with you, but there are a lot of people who are still opposed to that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
And some of them are even women.
Yes.
Women who won't say that they are feminists.
Young women who will say, no, I it drives me nuts. I'm not a feminist. If you say you're a feminist, boys aren't going to ask you to dance.
Well, I don't know about that. But a girl's got to do what a girl's got to do, which brings us to our guest this week, Tracy Dawson. She is an actor, a writer, a director, a comedian.
Now, you may know her as Megan Fitzpatrick from the show Call Me Fitz way back with Jason Priestley. But I met Tracy way, way back when she was just a baby comedian. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, and she'll correct me if I am, I think she was the youngest person ever to join Second City.
Wow. Kind of amazing and kind of neat that you have this history that goes way back. But she's more of a writer now, apparently, and she's written a book called Let Me Be Frank, a book about women who dress like men to do shit with a couple stars, to do shit they weren't supposed to do.
Really? What's it about?
I guess.
With no further ado, let us welcome Tracy Dawson. Tracy, look at you all grown up.
I'm grown. I'm a real boy. No, that's not right.
You've decamped. You're in Los Angeles, aren't you?
I've been in LA for like 17 years and I can't believe it. I can't. I actually am like, what is time? Which a lot of us feel, you know, after this, well, with this pandemic, you know what I mean? Like time has become like a completely insane notion. But yeah, I have decamped. It's hard to give up this 72 and sunny lifestyle. It really is.
Well, especially in the darkest days of winter up here, but I didn't realize you'd been gone that long.
What did you do with Maureen? What were the two of you doing?
Oh my gosh. Listen, memory's funny, right? Like how you can literally forget about something for eons. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, it was called The Dish Show.
It was called right? The Dish Show. And you were a guest, but then you became a writer after that, or was it the other way around?
I was a guest. I was a young comedian. I was like, happy to be invited on that show. Do you know what I mean? Like, because the people that you had as guests, the women that you had as guests on that show were like amazing. Jan Arden, Linda Cash, you know. And you co-hosted with Bridget Gall, and I came on as a guest. I mean, just highlight of my life at that point. And then,
what do you mean at that point?
Well, yeah, she was so young. She was so young. It was the highlight of my life at that point.
Yeah, now that experience is shit. No, I'm sorry. And then I was getting on with Martha Kehoe, who's like the executive producer. And I wouldn't put it past me. My memory is sort of like, I think I might have gone, hey, can I stay on? Like, I think I just sort of invited.
Yes, I think you did that. Yeah.
I think I invited myself as sort of like a script assistant. You know what I mean? Like,
that's
I
right.
was not paid. It was definitely like an intern.
I didn't know that.
I'm fairly certain I was volunteering you know what? Again, memory. Woo. So I believe I sort of stayed on in an intern capacity. But it was like, because of that, because of sticking around, I met incredible people. It was worth it because Linda Cash was on. I don't know if you recall. Linda Cash came on and she was casting a new TV show that she was doing with Red Green. What's his name? Steve Smith?
Yes.
Yeah. She was doing a new show with Steve Smith and they needed to find a teenager. And I happened to be someone who was in my early 20s, but looked really young. And because of meeting her on The Dish Show, I then got cast. That was my first like big recurring like TV show part.
God, I wish I could tell you it launched my career. No, I'm kidding. But it was true. And that's kind of how why we do this show, Wendy and I, Women of Ill Repute, is the people that we meet. God knows we're not making any money. I think we're interning on our own show, but we meet the most phenomenal people. And at the end of the day, that's that makes it almost worth it.
You have such great conversations on here. And I was listening to the Sex with Sue episode last night because I know Jane Johansson from years back at the Shaw Festival. We both worked at the Shaw Festival. And I am dying to see this movie, Sex with Sue, but you can't get it up here in the States. Down here.
Wherever you are, Los Angeles.
I can't stream it. So it's a bummer.
You should be able to find it online. I think it was airing on Crave back, but who can find anything?
But you can't access those Canadian platforms when you're in the States, right? Which is like...
So come home. I mean, that's all there is to it. So much better here. So now you're in LA, you're a writer, and you've written this book, which actually was given to me when we started this podcast, which is kind of cool.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who gave it to you? How can I thank
very,
them?
They're both lawyers, and they both knew that we were doing this, that Mo and I were doing this podcast. And they thought, this is so cool. And it's for sale. I live in Prince Edward County, which is the county, except apparently there's 25 of them. So, you know, to hell with that.
But they call it the county.
But you've written a book now, this book that I got called Let Me Be Frank. And it's about, it's got shit with two stars in it. And it's about women who dressed up. So it's everything from people who wrote books, published books. They escaped slavery. They served in the army. They practiced medicine.
Burnt at the stake. A couple of those.
Yeah. And there's something called a witch pricker, or there's even some bad people. But it all started with you in LA.
Being angry. It comes from anger, does it not?
Tell us that story.
It comes from vengeance. Yeah. No. Well, first of all, yes, I will say that the book is called Women That Dress Like Men to Do Shit They Weren't Supposed to Do. But of course, I'm stretching the premise there in terms of dressing. There's people who literally took on disguises to like serve in the army, to compete in sports or whatever. And then, of course, there's the authors or people that took on a male pseudonym. You know, obviously, this is all about access to opportunity. This isn't a book about gender identity or anything. Not that there aren't some probably queer non-binary people historically that would be considered, but back in the day that they were doing this, there was no terminology for gender fluidity. But for the most part, the people in my book are defiant women who are not taking no for an answer. And what happened to me in about 2013, I was really starting out as a TV writer here in LA, and an executive, I was meeting with an executive, and she said, so do you like any of our pilots? Could you see yourself writing on any of these new shows? And I said, yes. And I listed off these shows. And then she said, oh, well, none of those shows you just named have any female needs.
Female needs.
Yeah, that. I mean, you could interpret that a lot of ways, but I think I knew right away what she meant. And it was like, basically, especially in a comedy writing room in 2013, they probably thought female needs meant they had their one in two women. It's all too common. I think it's probably changed a bit in the last 10 years, but she said it right to my face. And I think I turned purple. I was so ashamed. I felt like such an idiot, because I never would have considered myself a female writer, a specialty item. You know what I mean? Like someone that was added for color. And so that kind of stuck in my craw and in my head. And then over time, I kept on hearing these stories here and there. Like I read this article in Jezebel, but this woman who, in 2015, she sent out the first 10 pages of her novel and to all these agents and queries, you know what I mean? And she got such a dismal response, she decided to send it out again with a male name and not her own name. And she got like this way better response. And I was like, what's happening? Like, is it the 18th century? So I started to research and I found way more examples than I ever thought I would. And I initially, this isn't in the book, but it was initially a TV pitch. You know, I was with a gigantic juggernaut agency at the time, and I had this idea, and it was like, it's a great hook, you know what I mean? But it's also an expensive show. When you do an anthology with all these different time periods, you have to get an Ava DuVernay or a Shonda Rhimes on board in order, or an Oprah, to like sell a show like that. And so people loved the idea. They were like, oh, what a great hook. But we didn't sell the show. I had done all this research. I had met all these women. They were like my sisters, you know what I mean? And I was like, I can't leave them behind. I wonder if this is a book. A thought I have never had in my life before this. And I said, well, who cares? I'll just start writing. Do you know what I mean? Like, it felt like a lark at the time. And then when I shared the pages, I was like, I don't know, is this a book? And people were like, this is a book. And I was like, oh, it's a book. So from the moment that I had the thought, I wonder if this is a book, to selling it to HarperCollins was only 4 months, which is insane.
But you're a female writer. I mean, like, really? I mean, can you really write?
Yes, you can write. You can write.
Well, it's such a joke. I mean, why have these stories not been told about? And why? I'm very glad to hear you say that there's not a quota anymore, because I think that, well, it goes back to when you were on The Dish with Mo. Like, Mo was nominated for an award and was told the women aren't that funny.
Oh, you know what? I am going to just follow up on that. So we had a great show. We were one of the first shows to launch the Comedy Network in Canada. It was ours and Mike Bullard's show. And we were the two, and Bridget and Mike and I did all the promotion for everything and launched some big hoopla and so on. Show did really well by Canadian standards for cable. Remember cable? Back when cable was the only alternative before streaming. We did really well. I can't give you numbers because I can't remember, but they were very good. And they didn't. And we did 26 episodes out of the gate and they didn't renew us. And Bridget and I, the talent, went to see. It was Ed and Susan, I think, were running. I'm not going to give the last names. And they said, well, we've decided actually, and this is not a word of a lie, that the target audience for comedy is young men. In other words, I can tell you right now, 1997, we were told women are not that funny.
So you've written this book.
No, I want to go on. I'm still angry.
And it's funny. No, but you're angry and you wrote a book. And now, but I'm wondering, is it changing? Like, do you still, like, I was amazed to read in your book that J.K. Rowling, we can talk about her for other reasons, but for this reason.
She used J.K.
Yeah, she used J.K. because what guy is going to want to buy a book that's written by Joanne Rowling?
So that came from the publisher. The story goes, right? Like, I wasn't there. None of us were there. The story goes that the publisher said, you know, we don't think that young boys, again, this notion that only boys buy books, that only boys watch comedy, which is not, the data does not support this, guys. But to be told, we don't think that little boys will be comfortable buying a book about wizards with the name Joanne on the cover. And what gets me, though, is years later, she's a billionaire. She's the most successful author that's walked the planet or whatever. And she wanted to write follow-up books that were adult-driven and not geared towards younger audiences. And she wanted to write about crime and espionage or something. And she was like, I don't want to use my name. I want to use something that's as far away from J.K. Rowling as possible so that I just, it's just the writing. Okay, but the name she chose wasn't Doris or Letitia. The name she chose was Robert. She chose a second name and she chose Robert Galbraith or however you say it. And I was like, I mean, I could say F you to J.K. Rowling for many reasons.
Yeah.
But it just gets me because I'm like, I wanted to get as far away from J.K. with a name as possible. I said, you know what's further than Robert is Doris. Because part of me is like, you know that it's, that there's, that yeah. It's sexist.
A guy's
you,
name.
Like,
yeah.
But you're not acknowledging it. Whatever.
You're playing along, basically. You're acknowledging. Yeah. You're complicit. Well, there were a lot of women like George Eliot and George Sand and all the Georges. And George from, all the Georges are really not Georges. That was, women didn't get published. That's not true. I mean, the Brontes did. Some women did.
My most well-read friends did not know this when I told them as I was researching the book that Jane Austen never published using her real name while she was alive, and none of the Brontes used their real names while they were alive to publish. So Jane Austen was always anonymous. Her first book was By a Lady, which was pretty remarkable for the time because a lot of people were writing just anonymous. And she's like, well, I'm not going to take a man's name. And I'm not going to take anonymous. I'm going to own that I'm a woman, but I'm just not going to use my name, which was not uncommon in certain circles because of the times, right? It was very immodest. It was like immodesty in women was just like, oh my God, we're going to die. A woman, right. You know, talked about herself, you know? Mm-hmm. But the Brontes chose male names. Every book that the three sisters published, they used a male name. And it wasn't until after their death that their true identity was known, which is just crazy because, like I said, nobody I know who's read they have read a lot of books and they were like, what? Because I think people just forget it.
Just so you know, Mo and I are not just the queens of podcasting.
I'm not sure we're even that, but do go on.
We're not part-time cowgirls.
We just made that up.
But we are writers. We're writers.
Wendy and I write a newsletter on Substack. It's a weekly roundup of thoughts and experiences, sometimes serious, often not.
Yeah, you're pretty funny. You write about falling down a lot. You write about your dog.
I do. You write about sex and politics and COVID.
All very, very serious things. We have a few thousand subscribers, both free and paid.
And you could be one of them if you'd like. Just go to substack.com and look us up by name, or go to our website at womenofillrepute.com and sign up there. We'd love to meet you there.
And now, back to being the queens of podcasting.
Yeah, sure.
The Women of Ill Repute.
I was surprised by a couple of things. There was that, and there was also the bit about how women couldn't run in marathons because, and this is in 1960, whatever, because their uterus might fall out. I mean, like, really? Really?
The stories that have been told, obviously, for time immemorial to try to, you know, keep women in line. I mean, what's the difference between you can't run a marathon because your uterus is going to fall out and Roe v. Wade falling? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like the control is still there. So obviously, as you mentioned earlier, like, there's anger in this book, but I do it with humor because I have to. We have to laugh, right? We have to laugh at this insanity because some of it is just so, like, the injustice is so mind-boggling. But that's why I wrote the book with my, because I'm a comedy writer first.
But you're not funny. As a woman, you're not funny.
Sorry,
go ahead. It's still sensitive. Oh, my God. Oh.
What's so funny is, It's like saying I have two heads. Like, it's so nonsensical to me, this idea of, because my favorite comedians, the best of the best, in my opinion, are women. Maria Bamford, Beth Stelling. I mean, these are the best working comedians. And it's just like, I don't like them because they're women. I like them because they're dope. You know what I mean? Like, it's, they're funny.
The other big surprise to me, because there was a bunch that created debates, I suppose, about, you know, women in history and how they're covered and not covered, was learning about pants. Like, the Joan of Arc, apparently, one of her big crimes was dressing as a guy. And that even until the 60s in Chicago, if you were to wear a pair of pants with a zipper down the front instead of down the back, that was against the law.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't read that part. Really? Having a zipper on the front was against the law? Hey, what are you in for?
That was exactly.
There were laws on the books longer than we care to enjoy that, you know, were like male trousers, like trousers with a zipper in the front were for men, trousers with the zipper in the back were for ladies. And so, you know, they used these laws to sort of patrol and police gay and lesbian clubs. You know, so they would go in and they would raid these clubs and they would shine their
Looking for zippers?
Where's your zipper?
Yeah.
And wow.
I was watching a documentary with all these older lesbians saying, you know, we'd run to the back of the club to switch our pants around.
Wow.
Like this,
that's crazy.
The hoops that
we
have
like
to...
That is like actually insane.
It's like the hoops that we have to jump through in order to just leave us alone. I mean, some of the women in my book weren't trying to be pioneers. They were trying to just like live, like just leave me alone. Like, I want to play this sport. I mean, there's a chapter about Iranian women who dress up as men so they could sneak into the stadium just to watch the sports. Some people in my book were pioneers. Some people are super famous, like Joan of Arc. But a lot of people don't know that one of the things that sent her to the stake was dressing as a man, right? Dressing in men's clothes.
Well, they thought she was a witch, right? I mean, so that witchcraft is a whole other, like, very, women have been called witches for since time immemorial. So this is probably a good time to explain witch pricking.
I mean, this is a chapter, as I was researching and writing it, I had to lie down because it's dark, man. The witch hunts is a, woof, but it is almost like, yeah, they so don't understand us. Like, they're so baffled by our amazingness that they had to, like, create this shit.
Yeah, what is a witch pricker?
So
there was such a thing.
There were many ways, you know, discover that a woman was a witch. But one of them that I didn't know about was witch pricking. And so they would take this long needle and, like, plunge it into a spot on the body, and the whole thing was it's madness, by the way. Like, none of this is sensible, obviously. But like, if you don't feel pain or if you don't bleed when we stick this in, you're a witch, right? So, I mean, they also would throw women into water and say, if they float, that means they're a witch.
Yeah.
So this is
a no-win situation. No,
yeah, the system is not great, guys. But so there was this woman, Christian Cottle, who I guess she probably was watching what was happening, right? And she's like, well, heck, first of all, they're making a good living. They're making money being these witch prickers. And you got paid an extra bonus for every witch you found. It's just like insanity. So
so you wrote about bad women as well as like women who dressed up for evil purposes to be witch prickers or whatever.
I mean, I like to think that, you know, yeah, it's pretty evil what she did. But also, like, I also like to think of the self-preservation aspect that had to have been present, right? Like, if I'm disguised as a witch pricker, no one's going to maybe accuse me of being a witch. And also, I'd like to make some money.
Yeah, well, that applies to a lot of people throughout history and today who, you know, they switch sides for self-preservation.
I mean, look at the grift happening in the Republic. I mean, are there any Republicans that aren't grifters? Okay, not that I want to go down the politics lane, but...
That's your next book.
Yeah, that's my next book.
Nice Republicans.
Yeah, right?
Like Republicans I like.
What?
What? Did not see that.
I did want to write about, you know, anti-heroines as well as, like, you know, it's like this idea that all women are good and, you know... It's like that's sort of feminism too, right? The right to the equality and like being an asshole.
Yeah. What one of the conversations that we have, and this is sort of a little off topic from your book, but on topic for this discussion, is, you know, this idea that the world would be a better place if women ran it. And it comes up again and again. And I'm of the camp that no, women are as capable of corruption and cruelty and given an opportunity. I guess because we just haven't been given the same opportunities. And I think it's naive to think that there's something intrinsically good about women that transcends the rest of humanity. But I want to talk about some of the women that that actually, like, I can't remember her name, the Pharaoh, the Pharaoh.
I'm not sure that's how you pronounce it, but sure,
I know
what you
it.
Mean.
Yeah, one of the greatest pharaohs in ancient Egypt was a woman, and unapologetically a woman.
Right, Hatshepsut. I mean, listen, not easy to say. And I couldn't believe I'd never heard of Hatshepsut. A lot of people I did talk to had heard of her. So it was, I maybe had a blind spot. But I didn't know that one of the greatest, most successful, you know, pharaohs of all time was a woman. And it's hard to say unapologetically because, I mean, it's ancient Egypt, right? And they're piecing together stuff to tell her story, right? As she got longer in her reign, she did start to adopt more masculine, like the imagery and the sculptures and stuff that exist, like they started to portray her as more mask, if you will, and like giving her pec muscles instead of breasts, and then adorning her with a fake beard. And so it's almost like I really, as I was researching this, there's a lot of controversy about her because the early Egyptologists were very sexist. Egyptologists in the 60s and the 70s would just paint her as this vile usurper, right? Who was just like grasping for power. But what was more likely was that it was about the family line, was about trying to keep the power within the family. And she stepped up because the little king was like 2 years old. So it's just like, let's not let the toddler run the show. How about that? Right. So it like totally makes sense, but it was unheard of. And so as she got longer in her reign, I think that they started to get insecure, which is why they started to lean into the more mask imagery and aspects. I mean, some say it's possible that when she like, you know, spoke to her people that she would have taken on these, like, imagine her wearing a fake beard.
Well, I mean, girls got to do, right? That's what we keep getting back to.
And she did a great job. You know, she did a really great job. And one thing I love hearing from readers is when they say, you know, I read that chapter, because obviously I can't get into everything, right? There's a lot of people in the book. But when they say, like, I ran to the library to, like, read everything about Hatshepsut, I'm just like, mm-hmm. It warms my heart.
They're great departure points is the thing. They're all vignettes, really. There's not an opportunity to get into too much depth, but you're right. It opens up a whole world of possibilities.
The thing that really struck me and made me think, and please tell me if this is total BS or not, was today. So we were just talking about somebody from thousands of years ago who didn't have her story told the way that you think it should be told, or a lot of people think it should be told. But then today, in the book, you talk about how, you don't say resting bitch face, but you do say, hey, baby, why don't you smile? And then you talk about that and you quote Virginia Woolf and you say that men see it as an insult when women aren't smiling, or when women say, oh, that sucks, or I'm not happy because that they're supposed to be a reflection of the man. But I wonder whether it's also that they feel that they can reach out to us, which is also kind of condescending. But it's like, hey, baby, why do you look so unhappy? Like, smile. So is it all going back to the ferret? What did we call her? Or the pharaoh? Yeah, but like, is it, so you talk about the things today, is it still there? Like, and the smile thing, I mean, is it a reflection of what has been happening throughout your book for hundreds and maybe thousands of years, or is it just a male female thing?
I mean, I personally think that the way the patriarchy has been set up is that to put it plainly, like, we're there to serve. And serving is more than just bringing you a cup of coffee. It's also being pleasing, like, be pleasing, smile, like, be there for me, do this for me.
But the devil's advocate part of me is like, don't. Maybe they just want us to be happy. The men, when they see a woman say, oh, well, you've got resting bitch face, just smile. Come on, smile, smile, smile. So it's so insulting. And yet, I mean, it still carries on. So maybe that should be your...
why the long face? You'd be so much handsomer if you smiled.
Would we ever say it to a man?
I mean, honestly, if they said it to men as well as women, then I wouldn't have a problem with it, but they don't. So I was on one of my first TV jobs here in LA on the Sony lot. And I was like, you know, it was my first big comedy job. And we were pitching ideas for the script I was going to write. And I was walking from the parking lot to our offices. And I was deep in thought. And it was just like, I want to do a good job. You know what I mean? I'm a professional. I'm on the Sony lot. I'm a fucking writer. Okay. And there's this older man walking towards me. And I probably look stressed out because I was. And he's told me to smile. And I just remember thinking, if I was a dude writer and I was walking along you know what he would do? He would assume that guy's got important things on his mind. Wow, he's dealing with some work stuff. Look at that guy. He's got a lot on his mind. He would never. I think I turned around. I mean, I don't remember what I said, but I might have swore. I might have said, are you fucking kidding me? Like, whatever. But I've never forgotten that, even though, of course, I think all of us have one of those stories. But it was the timing of that, because I was deep in thought about something that was really important to me in my career and my future.
I know. I think we all have a million stories like that. I want to ask, because, I mean, I could ask you about every single person you wrote about, because they're all fascinating, most of them.
Which ones didn't you like, Maureen?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the Snoresville.
No, actually, the thing that's interesting is while there were some that Joan of Arc being one and George Eliot being another, but there were most of them you don't know about or didn't until you read the book, which is really interesting, which, again, bringing it back to this podcast, some of our best guests are people that you haven't heard of who have amazing stories. So, you know, all in favor of that. But what I wanted to bring up in this day and age, which hopefully is more enlightened, despite the fact that we still have our feet in the past in so many ways, is that the fluidity in gender now. I mean, 100 years ago, we couldn't wear pants or zippers on the front. Now we can wear whatever we damn well want. Nobody can actually say you're dressed like a man or a woman. So we've changed that way. I mean, and in gender lines themselves are dissolving. I mean, this has got to be helping the cause, right?
Well, I would say, you know, we used to not be able to wear pants and now we can. So that's so much better. But the thing is that if a man, you know, walks down the street wearing a skirt, you know, if we're thinking in intersectional ways, which is where I'm not free unless all of us are free, which is like, I like that. Like I stand with that statement. And so I love all fluidity. It speaks to me. Like it really speaks to the truth. Like if I really get down to it, like not about what's political, not like just personally, like in high school, like I liked to wear men's clothes because I thought it was sexy. I thought it was cool. Like, I liked, you know, Diane Keaton a lot. And, you know, I do like to play around with gender stuff. And I think that everybody should. Like, I'm just like, it just feels like, why can't everything just be fluid? Well, it scares some people, right? Because they probably were brought up in a very strict, rigid, like, you know, there's probably a lot of shame. And so we're still working through some of this stuff. But I really do think if some of us aren't free, then none of us are free. So we have to keep standing together and keep working for that, you know?
So what now? What do you, other than the book on all the Republicans that you like?
very slim volume.
Just thinking about doing that makes me like want to throw up a little, like in a good way. In a good way.
Think of the research.
But you're working on another book, I think. Tell us what's now.
A script or a show. Tell us what you're doing because you've done so many interesting things, and obviously you still are.
Now that the strike is over, the Writers Guild strike, it's still, you know, we're still waiting to hear if they're going to ratify the actors agreement. But the writers strike is over. So now we can start up with all of our projects that were put on hold for a while. One of those is, you know, a screen adaptation of Frank, which is funny, right? The full circle moment of like, you can't sell it as an anthology show. And then you write a book and you have this intellectual property now. So people want to talk about it. So there's that, which is exciting, but of course, slow process, slow going. And so I'm working on my next book, which is a follow-up. It's not about women who disguise themselves as men, but it's still like feminism, women's historical nonfiction, but with a funny, humorous voice. And, you know, I continue to work to unearth women's history that really shouldn't have been buried in the first place. Like, it's sort of like, if I can talk, and really, it all the way back to when I was on the Dish Show and I starting at Second City and doing stand up and characters in like the alternative comedy scene of Toronto. Like, I think I was always turning this stuff on its head, right? Like in terms of bringing, oh my gosh, I was like, I know what I'm saying, and then my brain was like, no, you don't. haha, joke's on you. You don't know what you're talking about. But I.
That happens to me all the time. Blah, 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 blah. I don't know what I'm saying.
I was like on the road. Like, you know, when you're on the road and you're like, I'm on the road. And then you're like, where's the road? Where's the road? But just trying to bring, like, I was basically like bringing feminism to everything. And like, I would come out dressed as like a sweet girl with her little bob haircut. And then I would say just like really insane, aggressive, naughty things, you know? And I know that was all part of like me being a feminist and just wanting to, what's the word I'm looking for? Not circumvent.
Starts with an F? I have no idea.
guys, two syllables. I'll do my charades. Well, anyway.
You've kind of come full circle. You're back with Mo. So I think you should stop now. I think this is it.
I'm just so happy to see you. I just remember you talking about your little bob. You have short bangs. And yeah, you were at the time, you were like little pleated skirts and you said the most outrageous things. And that was really good and refreshing. And now you've got short blonde hair and still say outrageous things. So
I just had to, with the gray hairs and everything, whatever. We could talk about that. Like,
oh, we know. Look at us.
We all look fantastic. What?
It's welcome to the short hair club. So all of the people that we interview, they all have to get a haircut before.
No, you don't.
Right?
No, you don't. We're never going to get Jason Momoa
what
now.
What does Naomi Sneakus look like with her short haircut?
Yeah. Oh, it's been lovely to talk to you. I'm so happy. I read your whole book. I kind of skimmed it until you agreed to come on the podcast. And then I read the whole thing and it's great.
And then you read it. Yeah,
I know.
I did not read the whole thing because Wendy took the one copy we had and I said, you took it. But I will read it.
Frank.
It's called Let's Be Frank.
Let Me Be Frank.
Let
and
me
then
be
Shit
Frank?
With Two
no.
Stars.
Let Me Be Frank. A book about women who dressed like men to do shit they weren't supposed to do.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I just like saying the whole thing. I think it goes really well together.
it does flow off the tongue. Tracy Dawson, good luck with everything that you're doing. It's been just an absolute joy talking to you and seeing you again after all this time. And I hope that our paths cross again. And hopefully not in 25 years.
Yeah, exactly. I've had a great time and I appreciate you having me on. And also, it's great to see you. No, it's like I want to keep talking to you. Like, I'm just like.
Well, that's the idea. It's, you don't want to talk to people where they're like, God, can I get off this thing?
Leave them wanting more, literally.
Yes. Oh, let's hope we have. Thank you, Tracy.
Wow. It's so neat. I can't believe it was 25 years ago.
I got pregnant I did the dish show with Bridget, and you know what? I've lost touch with Bridget, who was my co-host, and I was hers. And we met so many phenomenal, funny women, and we didn't get rid of it. I had forgotten about how angry I was, because they actually did say to us, management, that the Comedy Network is now going to be aimed towards young men.
And you're not funny. Because you're a woman. Like,
That was the implication. They actually said that. They actually said that. This was 1990. Ronan was born in 98, so 97. And that was that. But again, just met some hilarious people, brilliant people, writers. Yes, Jan was one of our first guests. Jan's
still blogging.
Jan's still doing that. So yeah, it was really good. And I'm glad to hear that Tracy has found success and that she's working in LA. And it's always great to see. She was very funny. And very, like I said, she was young, like had a lot of chutzpah.
She's still got a lot of chutzpah. She's still mouthing off. She's still, mm-hmm. I mean, the book is very funny. I mean, it's very angry, but mm-hmm. it's also very funny. And she's still talking. Well, one thing we didn't get into, which I think is fun, because she sort of mentioned at the top that these days, like, we're actually like listening to people who are trans and non-binary people. So some people dress like men because they wanted to dress like men, or they... A lot of times her book has been called The Reverse Tootsie. Because it's about women dressing as men and yet you got to be careful. As she says, you've got to be careful because there are lots of people who dress however the hell they want to dress, and it's all fine.
As they should. Yeah.
So anyway, it was fun to hear her talk about fluidity with humor.
Word. Yeah.
Oh, F word. Yes.
Yeah. That's where we started. That's where we're ending.
What was the secret word that she was thinking of? The F word.
I don't know. We'll have to go back and listen.
Fluid.
Probably.
Fingering.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Women of Ill Repute was written and produced by Maureen Holloway and Wendy Mesley, with the help from the team at the Sound Off Media Company and producer Yet Belgraver.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com. And listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.